Folks, hello and welcome to the Dancers Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Donahue. We have a really fun episode with Catherine Blanford. The topic she said that she wants to work on is being more present. And we have a really good conversation about that. We have a really good conversation about just in general how easy it is to not be present. And I know it sounds a little hokey, right? Sounds a little bit woo-woo. Some might say. Sounds a little bit hippy-dippy, spiritual, schmiritual. But I like that kind of stuff, to be honest with you. And Catherine is just a really, really, every time I've met her, just so nice, so funny. Just a person where I was like, I want you on the podcast just to talk to you a little bit. And it paid off. It was really fun. We had a great conversation. We talked a lot about Beyonce, which... You know, I didn't get into this a lot on the podcast, but I'm a big fan of women and men musicians. I would say, like, my Spotify or whatever is probably 50-50. But when I was a kid, I remember taking my sister's Avril Lavigne CD and listening to it secretly because I didn't want anyone to know that I was listening to Avril Lavigne. And we talked about it a little bit. We talked about, like, the whole thing, guys listening to women's. I think it's a good sign. I think it's a good sign if you listen to women musicians. So we get into that. It's a really fun episode. If you want to follow Catherine, it's at Catherine Blanford on Instagram. I'm going to put her social media stuff in the description. And she has a special coming out. And please, please, please be on the lookout for that because I think it's going to be really, really funny. And she's great. And I think she's the kind of person where I am interviewing her now and it will be harder to interview her in the future. So without further ado, please enjoy the episode with Catherine Blanford.
Is this how I hold a microphone?
Yeah. I thought you had a podcast.
Yeah.
You still have the microphone thing is still kind of up in the air. Yeah.
Yes. No,
yeah,
I like it.
It's right about there. No, and I'll play with the levels after. So
okay, great.
If you want to, like, whip it around your head for any reason.
That's what I was thinking. and then I get serious.
Yeah, no, you make the best point you've ever made, but you, like, slowly bring them like,
like,
behind your head. I'm glad I got you on the pod.
Thank you so much.
First of all,
that's so nice.
I'm such a big fan of your comedy. The first time I saw you, we were in Long Beach at Steve Fury's show, and I don't know if you remember this. It's like Bear City.
Oh that, yeah, I think I bombed that show.
No, you absolutely did not.
Yeah.
No, you did. You had maybe a perceptive, like you perceived it as a bomb. Absolutely was not a bomb.
Okay.
It was not a bomb to anyone who was like watching and paying attention. I mean, to the. Maybe half dozen Long Beach residents who were just trying to find someone to swing with. No, they might not have been paying that close.
They're like,
attention.
This isn't good background noise.
Yeah, good background noise.
Yeah,
would be like, so
to
like,
seal the deal.
You ever try to get a third in or what?
Right.
Yeah.
And over they're like, ah! And then my country dog was like, oh, rah, 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 rah.
That was like right when you moved to LA, huh? That was like, did you move here recently?
Kind of. Well, I've been here a year. I moved in, I think, April of last year. But
okay.
Definitely the first 6 months, I was on the road a lot.
Right.
And then I still go back to Atlanta a good bit. Boyfriend and dog are there.
We saw each other there not too long ago.
Yeah. So I'm still going there. But back then I was, now it's like, it's like stopping for a day
right.
or two here and there. Back then it was like I was there for a week at a time.
God, I can't imagine having to go between two places like that. I can't handle one place. One place is so difficult for me.
I just had to realize, like, I don't have an anchor now, and just to be okay with it.
Has that been a part of your life where you've enjoyed that at all? Because my mom is exactly like that. My mom doesn't need to be tied to anywhere, does not need, like...
Is she a circus clown?
No, she's a saleswoman. She was a bricklayer, and now she's a saleswoman. She's like a very good saleswoman.
But what is she selling?
Brick.
And she just, like, what, does she live on the truck with the
constant
bricks?
Motion? No, I mean, she has, like, she has a place, but even right now, she has a place in New Bedford, and she has a husband who kept his place, and she's between those two places. Like, she's just always been moving around. Like, her job, I would be with her in the car as a kid, and she would go, like, 500 miles in a day, like, just from place to place, from plant to plant, and she would go into, like, the projects and stuff. And I would just be
laying the bricks or selling the bricks.
So she used to lay the bricks, and now she sells the bricks. There's a real pyramid when it comes to bricklaying. You can go from laying to selling if you really work hard enough.
I'm still grasping bricklayer, because when you say bricklayer, I'm like, oh, what is this woman's secret life? It doesn't feel like when you say bricklayer, she was slab.
Not only did she do that, she won a tournament in Florida. There's a bricklayers tournament. I know, it's hard to believe, but she won. She entered a bricklayers tournament with, like, a bunch of Portuguese men, and she won it.
Now, is this, are we judging on art? Are we judging on, like, your ratio of cement to brick, cement, brick, cement, brick, and how fast you can do it?
I'm positive, like, there's multiple categories. I'm sure it's, like, speed and then, like, how good it is.
How much ooze is coming between the brick? How much cement ooze? Like, is it
mortar? But, yeah, cement ooze is better. Cement ooze is good.
Hey, you got too much goo between your brick.
Honey, this building's too goo.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my. This is the gooeyest building I ever seen.
This brick won't stop drooling. It's got dry drool on
but
it.
No, my mom had very gooless walls. Just, she put up incredibly gooless walls.
Yeah, yeah, she knows the perfect, like, the perfect amount to slab, so when it gushes down, it evens out. It's like a...
How do you know all this terminology? You're so good.
I don't know. I got a physic brain, you know? I got a math brain. What can I say?
So are you from Georgia originally?
No. Okay, so I'm from Kentucky originally.
Kentucky.
It's very confusing. Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Grew up. Then left for college in South Carolina. And then bebopped around after college for jobs. And then landed in Georgia for a job in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then started comedy there.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, my favorite thing about places in the South, which I've only been to a couple and I've really liked it, when someone is from somewhere in the South, the more you are from there, the weirder your pronunciation of that place is.
Oh, yeah. Louisville, I'm sure.
Louisville. Like, yeah. That's how... And there's people who are even deeper in Louisville who you can't even understand when they're saying Louisville. They're,
I know.
I'm from Louisville.
I'm from Louisville. I'm from Louisville.
And it's similar with Boston, because I don't have the Boston accent.
How?
So, like, it's a really funny story, actually. My dad grew up in New Bedford. My mom has a Boston accent, hard Boston accent, really hard Boston accent. And my dad didn't, because he grew up in a black neighborhood, and black people tend to not have the Boston accent.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, a black person being like, what the?
What the heck?
What the?
Well, some do, but it's something, if you know a Boston movie, like, you know how there's 1,000,000,000 Boston movies?
Yeah.
You know it gets it right.
I've seen The Town.
The Town, right.
Yeah.
You know they get it wrong when, like, even the black character, like, all of the black characters also have the Boston accent. It's like, it's not, sometimes a little bit, but it's not really like that.
Yeah, do you feel like black people in Boston, when they book a Boston role and have to do a Boston accent, it's like... It's like me when I have to do, like, when I get, like, a slutty character, and I'm like, this isn't me, but...
But God damn it, I'll do it for
the
paycheck. But
God damn it, I'll do it for the paycheck. And it pains me. This is like black people be like, none of us have a
none
Boston
of us
accent.
No, it's it. My friend Terrence, who's from Dorchester, talks about this very often, because, like, Boston is a really... Especially for, like... I mean, I think it's been spoken about enough, but, like, for northern cities, it's like... weirdly racist. Like, it's racist in a way that's strange.
Well, yeah, because I get it.
Yeah, like the busing crisis and stuff, where Irish people were, like, throwing bricks at buses because they were trying to integrate schools, like, that happened in Boston. So there's this, like, big divide that's just not really spoken about in Boston, because Boston really wants to be, and it is to a degree, like, a very liberal stronghold and, like, a very,
yeah.
Like, but I think a lot of the times with northern cities like that, it's sort of like there's unspoken racism that you don't really see a lot.
I said this to my friend the other day, who grew up in a northeast city. It's because in the South, it's very the segregation that still is very it's more passive aggressive.
Yes.
It's more like we're not gonna speak like to your faces, we're gonna act to each other's faces, we're both putting on a character.
Right.
We're both putting on a mask. We're both going to act very cordial to each other, and then we're going to do fucked up shit behind the scenes, and we're going to do some dark jokes behind the scenes at each other's expenses, but we're not doing it to your faces. Northeastern, the segregation is you say it to each other's faces, and you understand each other. You're like, it's almost like, you know, y'all do this or whatever, and it's a face-to-face understanding.
Yeah.
That's out loud.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, I know exactly what you mean, because I think that there's less, I think it is in a lot of ways so segregated, you don't get a lot of that face-to-face connection.
Yeah.
So there's just not a lot of processing in the back of the scene. So like, yeah, I've seen it. I've seen like my black friends get treated in ways there when I'm like, holy shit, this is crazy.
Yeah, but it's almost like they say like, well, if we at least say what's happening, we
right.
can kind of get away with it because we're acknowledging it.
Right, yeah. But and it's not like, I mean, the South isn't, I mean, I've known, I've been wanting to talk about this. Cowboy Carter came out. There was a lot of, you know, very, and, you know, no offense, but dumb Southern people who were like, this is offensive and to country music and shit like that.
Did you know I'm obsessed with it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I am too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Big fan.
Ugh.
From Destiny's Child.
Ugh, from D.C.?
From D.C.
Oh,
love
my
it.
God.
Cater to You. I was in the car with my girlfriend, and Cater to You came on, and I started laughing at myself. When I was younger, I didn't hang out with, my music taste did not develop from other people. I was not around a lot of other people. It developed just from being online, so it was kind of unhampered in a way.
Yeah.
Because I could just kind of, so like no one ever told me like, oh, it's like gay to listen to Beyonce, and I just like the music.
Yeah.
So, like,
were people saying that is gay?
I think. Oh my! If you listen to Beyonce in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, oh yeah,
it was gay.
You get called gay for like show, like wearing shoes where your toes are showing. Like,
see, when I hear Cape Cod, this is from being in the South, and I don't know. Cape Cod to me seems like Maine, like very like boat shoes, like country club.
And you're taught. Let me tell you something about Maine. And I don't want to get too deep into New England lore because we can do that. So Maine, in very certain areas, are very much like that. Same with Cape Cod. In certain areas of Cape Cod, it's very well-to-do. It's very like hoity-toity.
Yes.
It's very like almost the San Francisco of the East. But there's parts of Maine. I want you to tell you about Northern Maine.
I don't even been. This is so interesting.
Northern Maine, there are still people who are like homesteaders. Do you know homesteaders?
Homeschool, we eat off our land.
That kind of homeschool, we eat off our land. We like are putting in solar panels, but not for the way that a lot of other people put in
like,
solar
panels. Like, because we don't trust the government.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like.
Got some bunkers, more than one. Bunkers.
You got bunkers to choose from.
Because, like, this is our bunker, and this is our cousin bunker. Like, we want y'all to survive, but we do not want to see you every day in the next world.
That's like a very New England kind of prepper where they're prepping, but they're also really hoity-toity. They're like, we have the summer bunker, and we have the winter bunker. Okay, we summer in the northern bunker, and we winter in the southern bunker.
Yeah, this one's closer to the Earth's core. We go there in the winter.
but
and then this one's got a sunroof for the summertime.
But the Cape Cod, like, I mean, I think people were really shocked when like the opioid epidemic hit Cape Cod super super hard, because people were like, it got dark.
Because there's a lot of lower income
lower income people, and just like the same sort of boredom and monotony as you see in the middle of the country that got hit really hard with that. It's like sort of a perfect storm. It's like disenfranchisement. It's like not a lot of access to jobs. And then I think there is sort of this other end to it where it's like there's just a lot of monotony there for people.
Like in the way of like being like there's not a lot of different avenues to embrace other aspects of life.
Yes.
It's like you wake up, you do the 9 to 5 to pay the electric bill, and then you drink the rest of the day away.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And then
that's everybody's
schedule.
And
then you hurt your back and you go, oh, drinking 2.0.
Yeah. Now we can drink all day long. You're just your job, you go to your job to break your back.
Right. Yeah. So like where I grew up, there were a lot of very hoity-toity people. There were a lot of people. Like, it was really mixed. But yeah, I mean, homophobia was pretty, like, rampant. But then you also have, like, there are a lot of, like, true progressive people out there.
Yeah.
Like, my friend group, luckily, was, I mean, more progressive than most of the kids in our school. So I never got the brunt of that. But I mean, you're still gonna, like, when you're a kid, you still can't be like, you like, especially in high school, you're like, no one can ever think I'm gay.
Right.
No one can know I'm listening to Beyonce.
Beyonce, of all things, is gay. I mean, she's like, she has the body that any straight man,
I
melt over.
I remember part of, like, one of the first things that I really thought was, like, hot as a kid was when Destiny's Child, I think they were, it was like they brought like a bunch of male celebrities on stage and basically, do you know what I'm talking
about?
She
danced on the guy from Hustle and Flow. What's
yes.
his name?
Yeah, I forget his name.
Yes.
But he's a very interesting guy.
Yes. God, I can't think of his name either.
I can't remember.
On him,
yes.
And then, oh my God, because I watch videos of it now and peep the comments about, like, you know, Beyonce comes out and does her thing. And then Kelly turns it on, and then it's Michelle.
Yeah.
And she's very – Michelle's a church girl.
Yeah.
She's a very – she's church girl from
Absolutely.
The get-go. And you can tell her – you can see that she is – it's
not happy about it. Yeah,
not
yeah,
happy
yeah.
about it. And the comments just kind of rip her apart, but it's so funny.
And it is like – there should have been some sort of a conversation where it's like, let's get Michelle to do something. You know what
but
I mean?
But that was Matthew Knowles era.
Yeah,
That was Matthew Knowles. It was,
and he was kind of orchestrating.
Oh yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he knew what he was doing, and it was like, I mean, I didn't go into some things, but I, from what I gathered and learned, it was kind of like Matthew Knowles was like, I mean, somewhat of a like he was kind of like, I have that power to make you, but you're going to listen to me and you're going to
do
exactly what I say.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to do everything I want.
Yeah.
And it's also like, we're going to support each other. We're a team. But it's also like, Beyonce is the guiding light.
We found our one.
We found our one. And I will make your dreams come true as long as you stand behind Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I didn't know a ton of that. But I mean, I obviously knew Beyonce was like the standout star post everything. Even though Kelly, great career after.
Yeah, she's about to drop new music.
Let's go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like that album is so interesting to me because the fact that anybody in country the way it is now to get upset at that album is crazy. Like, now if maybe this was in like 1970, I would be like, okay, yeah, well, she's pushing this genre in this way and it's kind of her first, like, this is a country album. What are you, this isn't real country. You know what real country is? Florida Georgia Line. That's what we've already changed this form. She did it in a cool way that rocks. What are we upset about?
And she also doesn't even say, she says it's not a country album. It's her
album.
Right. And she does it in the most Beyonce-esque way.
With nods to country.
With nods to country, with nods to old country.
Yeah.
To
which
like,
rocks.
Yeah. Like not, but, and then the pop of it isn't pop country. It's,
right.
It's her, she molds jazz and gospel and rock.
Yeah.
In there, and then also country, and then opera.
Yeah, and not to get pissed off, but if there's anything I'm going to get pissed off, it's talking about the greater works of Beyonce Knowles. Yeah. Now, Carter, now. But, the fact that people are like, oh, this is, it's like country musicians, like popular country musicians, who I don't have a ton of issues with, have been ripping off this exact, there's been trap beats in country for the last like 10 years.
Morgan there's freaking been, whatever.
He's auto-tuning. Like there's so much auto-tune, which is fine. Great. Do whatever kind of music you want. But to go after this album, crazy.
Right. Also, she made it a point on this album to not put synthesized.
Yeah.
she made it a point that every background instrument, I mean, there are some, like, whatever, what do you call it, like, mixed, like, from a mixer, like, mm-hmm. instruments from a mixer, but it is very minimal. She made it a point that every single musical instrument is played in studio from an actual instrument, from a human being playing an instrument. Like, to sit here and say it's not country when most of the country out there is made from a beat on a mixtape.
It's made from a southern robot. They have, like, a robot in Georgia that's just like, and my truck is drunk.
Exactly, yeah.
I have a drunk truck.
Oh, no, my Chevy got the hiccups again.
You're not in my drunk truck right now, and I miss you, and 9/11 was bad, and we should have invaded Afghanistan. Like, that's...
I miss invading Afghanistan.
My truck is drunk in Afghanistan.
My truck is drunk in Afghanistan.
We need to send the troops in to find it.
My truck's the only brave soldier in Afghanistan.
All the other ones are using critical race theory except for my truck.
My truck's straight. My straight truck is lost in Afghanistan.
My truck is so straight, I don't get inside of it.
My truck's so straight, I can't even turn left or right.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, like, it's. And have you researched, like, a lot of the background stories for? I mean, obviously you know about Blackbird.
Yes.
I know
like vaguely about, like, I know about Lemonade and all that stuff, but there's not honestly a ton of lore that I know about.
Okay, so do you know the catalyst for this album? Why?
No.
All right, so a song on Lemonade called Daddy Issues.
Yes.
Which Lemonade will still be my favorite album.
It's a great album.
Of all time, even though I do love 4.
I like the self-titled one, to be honest with you. And I know I'm a bit of a pop slut, but I love the self-titled album.
I kind of fought myself for being a pop slut, and it was this year that I was just like, you can be a pop hoe.
Partition, come on. You put on Partition any situation, it's good.
It's so good.
It's good.
It's so, and her live... The live of the silhouette of her on, like, kind of the sofa thing.
What are we talking about?
You can't touch it. The catalyst of this album, there was a song on Lemonade called Daddy Lessons, mm-hmm. which has a very country tone to it. It's a country song,
right?
And it was kind of her first attempt in that genre, and so the CMAs invited her to come perform it at the CMAs. And she was like, she asked if the Chicks, I think they were the Dixie Chicks then, mm-hmm. could join her.
Right.
Now, the Chicks had been cast out of the Nashville scene for their comments about George Bush.
Right.
They're from Texas.
Hilarious.
Yeah, right?
So crazy.
Right? But Beyoncé's from Texas. She had heard that the lead singer of the Chicks was so obsessed with Lemonade and specifically Daddy Lessons that on the Chicks tour they were performing Daddy Lessons, their version of it, and so she asked them to join her at the CMAs to perform it. The performance is amazing, but during it you can see they cast out into the crowd and you can see just some pissed off faces at CMAs.
Sure.
I think it was Alan Jackson that was rumored to have walked out in the middle of it,
right?
And people were up in arms, she doesn't belong here, da, 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 da.
Right.
It's like, dude, without, okay, whatever CMAs, but like, y'all are like, you're darlings that you are pop stars,
right?
Too,
right?
Like Morgan, I can't even, is it Waylon?
Wallen, yeah.
And like,
I like some of his music. I think Seven Summers, I was listening to that on repeat, but it's like, you can't say that he's allowed. You can't say Jelly Roll is allowed and Beyonce is.
Beyonce is a musical genius.
Yeah.
Like, everything she does, I'll get back to CMAs, but everything she does is an elevation of the last thing she did. It's so cool. One of my favorite albums is The Gift, The Lion King. Have you ever listened to The Gift?
Oh, I really haven't.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's one of my, there's a song called Bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to it when you're driving on a long road trip and you can roll down the windows. And if you don't cry, you need to go checked into a hospital immediately. Oh, it is such a beautiful song. But everything is, it's a, And it's not an elevation of like, look, I can do more than the next thing. It's an elevation of herself.
Right.
And like she's very dude, there's a podcast from Lost Culture Recess where they break down Cowboy Carter, but they also break down Beyonce's evolution, and everything is like she's very, I think why she's lasted so long in pop music and has stayed so grounded beyond what every other, you know, like even Janet Jackson had a long career, but yeah, had dips and lulls as far as like, I don't know. She kind of like faded out after a while, whatever else. And Beyonce's always stayed steady and grown and grown and grown, is because she operates from a place of love and of understanding, yeah, and of growing.
A love of music too. I mean, clearly loves music. And also, I think because she's quiet. Like she'll say,
she doesn't get wrapped up.
She'll make big points, but she's not doing a podcast. I think that's a big thing about
She doesn't get wrapped up in the comments.
Yeah. Doesn't
she doesn't respond to the comments.
Could you imagine? Yeah. Could you imagine she's there?
Right. You know who does though, and it's so fun? Go ahead. Her mom. If you follow Tina Knowles on Instagram, such a fun follow.
So I, this is a very New England thing, but I made a tweet about Tom Brady kissing his dad on the lips, which is a big thing, and
huge for you guys,
huge for us guys. That's the most. If you want to know about like high, and I know he's from I think Michigan. Tom Brady is, but that's some New England shit. That's some old money New England shit. Is kissing your dad on the lips like as an adult. That's what I assume, because I'm not in a lot of those circles, but I've worked for those people, and the way that they operate, I feel like, all right, you guys have probably kissed each other on the lips.
I like it though. Yeah. I've said I love. We were talking about kissing on lips this weekend on the tour bus, and I was like, I feel like it's mostly an aunt thing.
Yeah,
like all aunts kiss you on the lips.
Mostly an aunt thing.
But I kind of think the world would be better if guys kiss their relatives on the lips.
We, you know, everybody has their own like barometer and like comfort level with their family members, but I, you know, there's a point to be made about that. But long story short, I made a joke about it, and I get a reply. Now my Twitter has like 1,000 followers at this point, like nothing. I get a reply that's like, same joke recycled over and over again. Nice job, quote unquote comedian. And I'm like, oh, whoa! I was honestly excited. I was like, whoa! I never get negative feedback on Twitter. I look at it. Her name's like Lauren Brady. Tom Brady's, I think, sister will search on Twitter for the name Tom Brady and look for my post had two likes. She is on there constantly just looking for people who are saying negative stuff about Tom and then replying. And you know what? Is it a little deranged? Absolutely.
It's a waste of life.
Is it a waste of life? Absolutely.
Yes.
But it's a little funny.
It's hilarious. It almost goes back to your, I guess Michigan isn't kind of northeastern. It still is.
There's similarities. There's similarities between Michigan and Massachusetts, absolutely. Weather, coastal culture, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your brother's out there really grabbing life by the horns.
Crushing
it. In a whole lot of different elements.
Oh, yeah.
And you're spending your life on Twitter?
Defending him.
What?
Yeah.
Get out there.
Get out there. You're more than him. You're more than him.
Stick your head out a sunroof.
Exactly.
Stick your fucking head out a sunroof.
There's no way that lady
is sticking
her head out.
And listen to Bigger by Beyonce. Yeah. And then go find some effing hobbies and make some money out of them.
Empower yourself.
Yeah. Let's get off Twitter.
Yeah, like, that's great, great advice.
Yeah. So going back to CMAs. Afterwards, they post all the performances on YouTube and whatever else, and they got so much backlash. Yeah. Racist comments, hate. They took the performance down completely. You couldn't find it anywhere. Sure. And that was kind of the spark where she even when she like Instagrammed about, or she like made a post when Cowboy Carter was coming out, before it come out, that was the spark. And she, you know, said she entered into a genre that a point was made that she didn't belong there. So she made her own.
Very cool.
Her own way.
Incredibly cool.
Incredibly cool. And then, you know, to bring Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton in is almost a statement to be like, oh, the pillars of this, you fad chasers.
Right.
You know, you surface level chasers and country
which
can't
is
handle it.
True.
But the pillars, the Godfather and the God, not the God, you know, of today, maybe the Godfather and the Godmother of country.
If John Prine was alive, I could see him being
right,
the
standing
album.
Beside her.
Absolutely.
Right. So very strong statement there. And then, so that's kind of was the catalyst of it because she grew up in Texas. Like, I just know this from following her mom from whatever. How many years? Like
you're so deep.
So oh yeah.
You're so
oh, I'm
deep.
So deep into it. It's actually like this is when I go, Catherine. You should stick your head out of sunroof and stop like diving into Beyonce's life.
We'll get into that because that was your self improvement.
Yes. Oh, my Instagram explore page is all Beyonce.
Awesome.
It's all Beyonce. It's kind of sad.
Mine is frogs and MMA fighting.
God, I love that.
Yeah.
I get how frogs could. Can turn into obsession.
It's little frogs and it's little MMA frogs. Fighting. And I opened my Instagram in front of my girlfriend not too long ago, and she was like, "Damn, there's like no hot women."
And
I'm like, no.
"And you're like, I mean, but do you see
I
this
mean,
toad?
Do you see the shit?
Do you see the bumps on this toad?
Do you see the bumps on?
You can't say no, hot women.
There's these new. No, we'll go back to Beyonce, but there's these little. I think they breed them almost like pit bulls, where it's like, oh, this thing shouldn't exist. You know those kinds of animals, where it's like, oh, like these little circular guys with little tiny heads, and they're always frowning, and they're so cute.
Is it a toad?
Yeah, little like. I mean, it's like a frog. It's a toad. It's a little bit of everything. All I really need to do is go to my explore page.
This. Is it poisonous?
I don't think so. No, I think they're just really nice.
Have you seen the?
That's real, right there.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's real. You see that guy?
Oh God, that's adorable.
I just went right to my explore page. You know,
and they have like spotted little bellies.
Just so helpless.
So cute. Oh,
yeah. Attentive. Come on.
Oh, I get it.
Come on.
Oh God, they look like a Neopet. Do you remember Neopets?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And it does look like a Neopet. You're right. Yeah. I'm gonna take a screenshot so I can add this to the podcast.
Have you ever watched the videos where somebody puts a little pond out for a toad?
Yeah.
And they start multiplying, really, and then they add another house, and they add another toad condo, and all of a sudden their whole backyard is...
Oh, you mean my goal? My goal if this podcast takes off?
Dude,
absolutely.
You could do that.
I could do that here. I've already done so much. I've already turned half of my living space into a podcasting studio.
It's my dream. It's so cute.
But no, that's cool. It's good to know the origin of that album. It makes it even cooler.
Right. Yeah. So, and there's so many... There's so, like Blackbird. You know about Blackbird.
Yeah. Well, so... I mean, I heard the song on the album.
Okay, so she asked Paul McCartney if she could redo Blackbird. Paul McCartney wrote Blackbird, now I'm not saying this right, I think in the 60s.
Okay.
Or he maybe wrote it later on, but for the people. He wrote it in London for the Little Rock Nine. When they were trying to stop segregation.
Whoa.
Remember the nine students that they, black students that they were like, we want you guys to come to this white school, and then the Arkansas government stopped them, and then the president had to send a guard to escort them in, and you know, people would shove them, spit on them, throw shit at them. I think there was four or five women as part of the group, and Paul McCartney wrote Blackbird to them as
oh,
a song of support and encouragement.
That's really
so
nice.
back when he wrote it in London, kind of a like a cute nickname for women, they called him birds,
right? Yeah.
So it was, this is your time to arise.
And now it's sexist.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah,
bird?
Yeah. Oh, look at that bed over there. Yeah, it's just how Cockney your accent is. It makes it more and more offensive.
Like, what would that be here? Like, pretty little thing?
It's maybe a little bit more elevated. Chick. Look at that chick over there.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Maybe there's a world in which it's cute, but there's the connotation, I think, is generally
It's usually meant to demean you a bit.
A little bit.
Belittle you.
A little bit belittling.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Back then, it was like,
yeah,
this is your time to arise. Those were the lyrics. It was for them. So,
really
Beyonce
nice.
Sang it, kept it. Jolene, she rewrote. Jolene
right.
is
right.
hilarious.
Right.
But she kept Blackbird as it was, and she invited four black women country artists to join her on the song. So it was almost like, here's your time in the genre. And all four of those women are charting on the Billboard charts now.
Very cool.
And so it was, doesn't it give you chills when you hear that?
It does. That's very nice.
Yeah. Like,
also, you have all the power. That's a person who has all the power in the world and uses it to do cool shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, I know I can get you on the Billboard by putting you on this album because I'm so powerful.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do that raw.
She brought Miley Cyrus on on Two Most Wanted. Miley, another artist that Nashville kind of cast aside, because they're like, you don't play our roles.
Sure.
You're kind of a bad girl. You know, you're eccentric. You right. know, you're not straight.
Right. And the thing about country music, which, you know, I will, and obviously you know this too, it's like there's never been any like bad people or rebels who have made good music in country, you know? No. Like that's never been what country music being about somebody doing something that's a little bit like maybe shocking and against the grain. That's not yeah. what country music has always been about supporting the United States military.
100%.
And also police, no matter what they do, in mm-hmm. every regard, no matter how bad it is.
Yeah.
And just drinking beers with your feet on a truck.
Right.
That's country.
Status quo.
It's what it's literally always been about. And by the way, I've listened to country music all the way back to 2002, which is when I think it started.
It did start in 2002. Yeah. It started in 2002 with... We'll put our foot in your. We'll put our you boot put in our, your
I'll
ass.
I'll put my boot in your ass.
Country music actually started September 2nd, 2001. No, September 12th. Country music started September 12th, 2001.
And I knew it was gonna happen yeah. 9 days before it did. I got a call like, from the government. Actually, they said, Kenny Chesney, you gotta make a song about this.
They actually, country music is behind 9/11. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that. They were like, okay, Gwen Stefani's becoming too powerful.
Right, right. Let's take it back for the boys for
yeah,
a second.
Yeah, we gotta knock down some towers. And by the way, Gwen Stefani should eventually marry Blake Shelton, and that's the end of pop and rock.
Oh my god!
And so, only countries
it
around.
Was an inside job, so they could yeah. sell. So they could sell the and you're never gonna do that again to us.
I mean that we'll put a boot in your ass, which is gay.
I guess a bit,
kind of gay. Kind of gay, guys.
A boot going in an ass could be a beautiful like pride symbol, I think, in like a nice sexual kind of way.
Yeah,
you know?
But it's like a stiletto boot. It's camouflage, but it's stiletto. Yeah. Okay. So, what was my other? Oh, so, and but to go back to Beyonce, you know, she there's so many different genres in it, and she makes it her own, but. At the beginning and then it comes full circle at the very end with Amen. It's all a prayer.
Yeah. It's Amen's great.
Amen's beautiful.
I always get the number wrong when there's numbers in songs, but 16 carriages, is it? 16
it's carriages. 16 carriages. That song is about, you know what that song's about.
No.
That song
I don't know what anything's about.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God. See, I'm trying not to nerd out too much.
No,
I mean,
this is good. I like this. I like learning.
So, 16 Carriages is about watching her, how many sacrifices she's made for her career. Mm-hmm. And watching, it's almost like 16 carriages is like 16 candles. Like watching her, she never really got to have a teenage years or a childhood.
Of course.
And she talks about how, you know, this career kind of broke her family up. Like
right.
her dad and her mom got divorced and her dad was cheating on her.
Right.
But like now she wants to operate from a place of love and she wants to make time for her children and she's learning and growing and she's making moves to like be more present and have time with her family and her friends and et cetera, but like talks about the sacrifices that
right.
that the job and how hard she was worked
that
and
makes
everything.
Sense. It's a very like kind of somber song.
Yeah, it's almost like she's watching like 16 carriages like as she's 16 years old watching her teenage years
yeah,
get
go
carried
away.
Away.
Oh, that's cool.
It's beautiful. Ooh. So also I just read something that she talked about in an interview that she almost every song. Okay, so many. I'm trying so
No,
hard.
This is good.
She recorded 100 songs for this album. 100 songs and then started piecing them together and finding the themes.
Whoa.
Isn't that insane?
That's
There's
crazy.
So much music. I bet they have 300 songs between her and Jay that they've never released. But some of them I think she like combined and
isn't
then
it,
started yeah.
Isn't it crazy how much harder musicians work than most of us?
It's
Let me, she, do you know what I'm saying?
Every song is based off of a Western movie.
It's
a
like,
repurposed Western movie. Some of them, one of the songs is based off of The Hateful Eight.
Every time I write a joke, it's just did this make a crowd laugh once or twice? Okay, this is a joke. I could never imagine doing a joke where it's like, yeah, this joke is actually based off of like a Skarsgård movie. Like, there's no
right, like a movie, my childhood. Yeah. It also has references to these three music, you know, country artists from back in the day and their journey. Like, everything she does is has so many different messages.
And I'm like, this is a joke about how coming is weird. That's the top and bottom of it.
You're like, how I kind of am insecure about my cum.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm at me and Beyonce talking about our processes next to each other. She's like, you know, though, this actually relates, like, it was a Terrence Malick movie, but then also, like, Marty Robbins gave me a lot of influence for the story writing, so I just kind of combined both of those into sort of like a psychic sunset and what I thought sonically it would sound like, and I would be like, yeah, and my joke is about how my dad's a little weird.
My dad's a little bit more fruity than the other dad. Yeah.
He's just a little different.
He's just a little bit spicier. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking the other day, I was like, it is hard for us. We go out there and we kind of have to eat shit to get better.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like as musicians, I guess you kind of eat shit behind closed doors as you're creating something. But once it's out and you just kind of.
The eating shit is just different, and I think like less maybe in the moment. It's more
it's less public.
Less public. Well, this actually leads us into the topic, because there was something that we have talked about that I think goes into this, at least for me personally. We talked about how audition sets, like when you need to do stand up before an audition, is difficult. Like,
because we were back to back on so many of these
back
things.
Back to back on two in a row.
Yeah.
By the way, I thought you did great on both. I did not feel good on either. And the second one was the one at the Laugh Factory, which the audition for the thing that no longer exists.
I mean, that in itself, this is like, what's our job? After that happened, I was like,
you got to push the pod.
It was after that that I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm not basing any of my worth off of the industry.
We're talking about JFL, of course. JFL was a comedy festival. It was being the operative word that we
like,
both.
Like how bricklayers have competitions.
Right, yeah.
Comedians have an industry thing that only comedians know about, and no one else in the world gives a shit about.
I think people care about the bricklayers competition.
Bricklayers competition is
people
no care. Thing.
People give a shit.
Yeah, but, that's a really good point.
But no, yeah.
People
no,
don't give a shit
no
about
one cares, but
comedy industry things.
I think my audience does at least a little bit. So like I don't think we're lamenting too much on the podcast by talking about it.
Well,
but
I say that coming from a place like I didn't start comedy in college. All my best friends in college are just gals I was in stories
regular
with, and regular
people.
Explaining to them what JFL is,
right?
I watch their eyes gloss over.
So like you make like no money?
Yeah, they're like, so what? So, and I'm like, it's like a conference for comedians, and they're like,
oh, so how much does it pay?
And you're like, well, nothing, but like you do a little thing, and they're like. Like, all the other comics are there?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And
so it's like a regular show, then.
You're like, no. It's for, like, yeah, it's kind of like a regular show, but no normal people
are
there.
Oh, so this is what you were shitting yourself about for 2 weeks
prior.
Oh, for just kind of a normal show, but there's a few more people there.
Like I do every other weekend. Yep. Actually, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
But it was so funny because we auditioned, and then the next day they were like, oh, the thing you auditioned for and were like really nervous about no longer exists. I mean, I got to say this because let's just kind of get into the topic here. My dad was a yoga teacher and like a huge meditator and like very early adopter to mindfulness meditation.
Yeah, your dad was different. Than
he
the
was
other dads.
He actually was pretty different. Yeah, different. And so I was like meditating when I was really young, and I've been back and forth between it. Like I have an interesting relationship with it and mindfulness and all that sort of stuff. But there was a story he told me when I was really, really young that really stuck with me, where there are these, I think they would be called monks, but I'm not sure exactly, but like Buddhists who would make these really beautiful they would stay up for days making these like sand structures that are more beautiful and intricate than you've ever seen, like on competitions where people use like machines. They're just able to do this thing, and it'll be 3 days. They won't take a picture of it. They won't do, as soon as they finish it, they take it and they destroy it. They just completely no evidence it ever existed. And it's just to kind of like orient you with ephemerality, like the fact that life is ever changing, nothing's ever going to stick with you. And to me, I mean, maybe this is just me finding a bright spot in a shitty situation, but I was kind of like, it's kind of, I feel like it was a little bit of a cool cosmic joke to like try out for something. You're going in your head about like, oh, do you think they like, maybe they did really like me. Maybe that moment of silence that like I didn't really like, they liked that.
They were really listening.
But they were, and then you wake up the next morning, it's like, oh, it didn't even exist. The whole thing was just kind of a dream. It didn't even exist.
And your life goes on.
And your life goes on. Because the topic you wanted to bring up was presence and being in the moment. Do you feel like, especially when it comes to like high octane moments like that, is that where you were the least present? Or is that where you're the most present?
No, I'm the least present. And I realized, you know what, it was after like having stuff pop off and kind of living in that world for like a year and a half now, where I would get so excited and I thought this next thing was going to be the thing that was going to make or break me. And then I got a no. And then I got another rejection. I got another rejection. I got another rejection. And it hurt and it hurt and it hurt. And then it hurt less and it hurt less and it hurt less. And then I was like, and then the second you got a rejection from the thing that you thought was going to be the thing that popped you off, 2 days later when you were depressed or whatever else, something else came along.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm just going to move on to the next thing. And I realized I hated living in the world of despair over nothing I could control.
Yes.
And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let other people's decisions like dictate how I walk around every day.
I think it's a very powerful thing that some people, I don't know if you've ever experienced, but there are some people that just kind of have that naturally, which I don't. I don't have that at all, but there are some people that kind of inherently understand, like, oh, yeah, this is just kind of, like, bullshit. Like, what anyone who sells you a dream, and everybody I know, at almost every level, maybe you have to be a little bit far ahead, but everybody at a certain level has the story about when they almost made it huge.
Yeah.
Every, like, middle-of-the-line headline, like, we were talking about the headliner that could sell half a room. Few people come in, but not, like, every one of those people and up has the story about when they were almost the most famous person in the whole world, and it just didn't happen. And you hear enough of those stories, and you go, oh, maybe we're chasing our own tails in this own way.
110%. But it's also like, even the headliner that sells half the room or whatever else, I'm like, you're also living life. You have such a better life.
You have such a good life.
Than the people from Cape Cod who are going to their job and then drinking the rest of the day away and going into that circle until they break their back. Like, your life is dope.
I certainly prefer it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I say it every day.
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, but we're also in the business where we see the people, the next level. They're standing next to us all day long.
Yeah.
So we're constantly being fed. Like, you could be doing better. You could be doing better. Until you don't realize, like, we're also living a pretty fantasy world. We're living in a fantasy world right now.
So was there a moment, or did it just kind of happen, like you said, after a compilement of moments where you were like, oh, I'm not very present. Like, I'm not living the present moment. What was that?
It was very recently. Okay. It was a couple of things where I get worried if I'm not living in the present moment.
Sure.
Or if I'm living the present moment too much, then I'm not going to work as hard. Or I'm not going to be... I thought getting better meant always not being satisfied with yourself.
Right.
And being how can you do better? How can you do better? You need to beat yourself up to get better.
Yeah.
And then that started to transpire into, like, when I was with people, like, you know, I was on tour. Well, I was with Bert and, like, a bunch of other comics on the tour bus, and we're all talking, laughing. I was miserable because I was going, what if I say something stupid? What if I'm the least interesting person? And I'm living a dream. I'm on a tour bus with one of the goats of the world. I'm doing arenas, and I'm miserable because I feel like I'm not good enough. I feel like I'm sounding stupid, or if everybody hates me. And I was like, what's the point of all of this if I'm miserable, if I'm beating myself up? And I think it was in therapy when I just kind of was like, I want to work on my self-talk. And I kind of just shortened it to, like, what if you die tomorrow, how pissed off are you going to be because you didn't enjoy living in your dream out because, you know, you weren't like the best at everything all the time.
Oh man.
And
I mean,
then, yeah. And then I literally just started living with it. And I was like, oh, this is such a better way of walking through life instead of being miserable because I'm not doing everything I should right now. Or if I'm not the most interesting, or if I'm not holding court in the room the most or whatever. And I was just like, I would rather live my life being present and enjoying other people and maybe not killing it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, not getting everything done or being the best at everything, then to get everything done and be the best, but beating myself and miserable. Oh, I would rather be here. I would rather be here and happy than here and miserable.
Right. Yeah. And here's the thing. When it comes to, it's so funny. The tour bus thing hit me really hard because on the Patreon, I told the story where I used the name, and I'll tell you after, but there's a comic who's like a big dog at the Comedy Store. And we had this conversation where we were in a group of people, and I had that, I don't know if you've ever had this, but like, you might be in a circle of people and there's a person there where you're like, I've seen everything you've ever done. Mm-hmm. I've watched you go up 100 times, and now I'm in a circle of people and you're like looking at me in the eye and listening to the few words. I was like, oh my God. Like, and what I do, and my thoughts can spiral in this other direction where I can get really grandiose and I start going like, maybe we're going to be like best friend. Maybe he's going to look at me. Maybe after like everybody goes, he's going to turn to me.
I've been on
a
first date before. Yeah. I know the spiral. Oh my God, our grandkids.
Oh my God, I cannot wait to introduce you to my parents.
Yeah.
You're only going to be the 10th guy I've done this with.
Yeah, I planned out our lives together.
Yeah.
Hour two. Yeah, but no. I know what you're talking about.
And I was looking at this guy like a starry-eyed fucking lady. I was like, oh my God, you're going to be... And then a little later in the night, I'm out on the patio by myself, and he comes by. I'm so nervous, and my thoughts have cycled so much, and I've built it up so much in my head. This isn't like a guy in front of me anymore. This is a representation of my potential future. And my words – he goes like, oh, hey, did you get up at the belly room? And I go, but before not – but may after – before no, later, yeah, no, maybe. And it wasn't that far off from what I just did.
Yeah.
And he looks at me. He goes, all right, cool, man. Taps me up. I miss his hand, and he leaves. And I was like, oh, man. The lack of presence in the other direction is also real. And that's – so now just to tell you a little bit about – which I don't think you knew any of this. But, like, I have – like, I used to work at a meditation center. And which is really funny. I worked at another one before then where I was just like a volunteer. And one of the things.
Would you say the opposite of meditating is podcasting?
That's a great. No, I think this can be. Here's the thing. I think podcasting is probably like the best thing for your headspace you can possibly do. It's really, really good for your personality, for your self-esteem. I think it's maybe one of the most high-minded spiritual endeavors one can do.
I think actually you're right.
Yeah.
After you get over, I think about a year in podcasting.
I'm kidding, absolutely.
Oh, I know. I think you're serious. I think you're right.
I like it, but it's however you use it. I mean, like, you've seen like YouTubers podcasts where they're sitting around like, yo, how many girls have you smashed?
Right. No. 100%. But honestly, that might be the authentic them though.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is really blossoming.
But so like,
sorry. Okay.
No. So one of the hard things for Americans specifically to understand and grasp about mindfulness is we understand like letting go of bad moments.
Yeah.
And this is really unpopular if it's taken out of context what I'm about to say, but you also have to let go of good moments. Like looking at both of them, because if you hold on to a good moment too tightly, like almost in a way what you did on the tour bus and what I did with the guy, I held on to this good moment way too tightly and it took me out of the present moment.
Yeah.
Like any sort of attachment will take you out of what's going on right now, and that's what's important when it comes to like living a full life and being there and understanding what's happening around you. Like that's the big thing, is like letting go of both things. Like we understand, oh, when you're having like whatever a root canal, like it's best to just, some people think it's best to kind of detach,
right?
But in both cases it's like be there when it's happening and then let it go after. But it's really tough,
like the great moments, keep them with you as a reminder of of what got you there and yeah. you live in the moment, but also like don't let that hinder you from focusing on the next great moment.
It's like it's the person who had the opposite experience of us and got the opportunity but a little too early.
Yes.
And they can't let it go. And yeah. other people can't let it go when they're all clinging so tightly to it. And it's like, no, this is my one. This is the thing. This is the, and it's like you've got to just not attach yourself to those
right.
things. But yeah, so I've worked it, like, and mindfulness is so interesting to me because I kind of went in a big full circle with it, where I was like, as a kid and stuff, so wrapped up in my own thoughts, so wrapped up in my own head, like I was a little psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Learned how to meditate, and I kind of like I got really into it, like really really into it. And then working at the meditation center, I saw kind of like the dark side to it.
Oh, of getting
people who attach themselves to spiritual endeavors as a way to like use like a cheat code to life, where they're like, oh, mindfulness will be my way out of the ebbs and flows of life, the negativity of life. I will use spirituality as a way. And the trick to it, I think, is to be like, no, there is no way out of it.
Almost like, is it like, I have two analogies I want to say, but is it almost like the people that say like, manifest, if you want it, manifest
yeah.
it, say it over and over again that
oh,
you want
yeah.
this and then you'll get it. And it's like, oh, you're focused on the end result. You're not actually focusing on realizing if you wrap your head around something you want it, you realize what's important to you and look at yourself focusing on the goals and being proud of yourself for being dedicated to something and taking steps towards it. You're almost like focused on, look, I meditated and I got it. Spirituality works and
yeah.
I'm strong in that.
Well, it's the most American thing ever to look at spirituality and to go, okay, so this is here so I can get a sports car.
It's like capitalistic.
Yeah,
kind
yeah,
of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, but there's actually, wait, I actually had a video.
When you said, I have an analogy
yeah.
for it's hanging on to the good parts too long, because I feel like I have this sometimes with clothes hoarding. It's
yes.
almost like you had your favorite t-shirt from childhood.
Yeah.
And whatever, you got it at a vacation or whatever, and you hang on to it so long, and you bring it from apartment to wherever you go, and it doesn't fit you anymore.
No.
But it has good memories, and you keep it around, and it just takes space in your closet, and then you find a really cool t-shirt that you want to buy, but you're like, I already have too many t-shirts. I have
yeah.
that one. So you don't get the new cool t-shirt because you're hanging on to the childhood one that doesn't even fit you anymore. And
right.
you haven't worn it in years, but you drag it everywhere.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And you're holding, and you become burdened by good memories rather
yeah.
than propelled forward by them,
yeah.
which I think is like the thing that makes sense. It's like it's such an old saying, but this too shall pass. And
yeah.
you're supposed to use it for good things and bad things. But I think like Westerners and Americans cling on to that as only meaning to bad things, because bad things can never happen. Like good things are good, and you have to, and it's like
they attach their worth to it.
Yeah. And you're not like understanding it at its deeper level, where it's like, well, this is just sensory data that may end up being good in the future, but you're just like, you're not taking it in the present moment. You're trying to turn it into something that benefits you later on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. There's something I want to show you. This is, I think mindfulness and presentness, we will continue to talk to, we have a few questions related to it, but this, I think, in the United States, is sort of the end result of what a lot of people seeking of presence is.
Yeah.
And it has a dark side. And I think you might have some interesting opinions on this video we're about to watch. Let me just take it off mute here. So these are two women. I'm gonna put it up for the people watching on YouTube. But it's two women with really big podcasting gear.
I worked with a medical intuitive, yeah. and she said every time she sees someone with Lyme, it's an intergalactic substance, and it's literally bringing in codes from the beginning of time.
Yes,
I know.
I believe this. This gives me chills
yeah.
down my entire body.
Yeah,
I believe it.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it in those exact words before, but I'm often trying to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Lyme is a gift.
Yes.
Lyme.
Yes.
It is not
yeah.
for the faint of heart.
No.
And it is for the most deeply
the
spiritual
scooter
people on the planet.
Yes.
No. Lyme disease. Lyme disease. I know this. The scooter.
Hold on.
The scooter might be a gift.
So they're saying people with Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Have a gift from the intergalactic.
It's intergalactic information. Yes.
That the world is constantly causing them pain.
You understand this. As a fellow woman with highlights, you understand what she's saying.
And they're like, oh, yes.
Yes. Those, I've been trying to say this.
Yes, they are a connection to the portal. Meanwhile, like somebody with Lyme disease is like keeled over in the corner with a migraine.
The reason why I show this is because this and these kinds of people are why a lot of people are reluctant to get into any form of meditation, spirituality, all that kind of stuff, is I think there has been this sort of like subversion of it where when you think of those sorts of things, which are the simplest things in the world, you think about that. Like whenever people start even bringing up like, oh, like being mindfulness, maybe meditate or something, you think like, oh, you mean like the Lyme disease is an intergalactic? It's like, no.
Yeah. Oh.
No.
Oh, like also like you should take your biggest pains and struggles and how do you
right.
How do you become a vessel for the gods in the heavens?
Right. Yeah, you're back in evangelical church.
What
yeah.
What is your migraine? What are the messages coming
right.
from Zeus through your migraine?
She might as well be on a stage with a snake. Do you know
yes.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, it's the same ideas, it's the same ideology. But like when you're really talking about presence and stuff, it really is the simplest thing in the world. So what are you doing now that you've had this realization? Have there been any steps taken to try to be more present? Have you noticed a change in your life?
Oh, like this weekend was one of the best weekends. Like it was another one where I got to go on tour with Bert and Matthew Broussard was there and Derek Streep, other comics.
So funny. Yeah.
But I just kind of took this idea of like, one, I just, the negative like self-talk, I was just like, I just kind of like decided to throw it away and just accept, like, I was like, I'm just going to enjoy them instead of constantly going, what are you doing right
how
now? What
can
are,
I add
are you,
to this?
How
it's
can
like,
I add to this?
They've been in this. I mean, I don't know how long you've been doing stand-up, but for me, when I see those guys, I'm like, if I'm really thinking about it, I'm like, oh, they've been in this longer than me.
Why don't you just listen?
They're going to be funnier. Or at least, like, if not, not to even put a judgment value on it, but it's like, I should be listening to them. They already were where I am. They already did this.
Right.
They know what it's like.
Yeah, and I'm like, just enjoy it. Like, I'm like, don't be, you know what I said to myself? I was like, this is okay. You watch Almost Famous?
Yes.
With Kate Hudson?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, it's okay to be the kid. It's okay to be the journalist kid sometimes.
So many people don't understand that. And
be
it's
the journalist
really
kid.
Weird. And it creates this weird power dynamic where I think a lot of people, like, who are at the, like, you know, I'm at a place now where I'll go to open mics, and a lot of the people at the open mics, like, are like, oh, well, Dan is, like, ahead, which I don't feel. But they're like, oh, Dan is ahead in his career. And
but you are.
It's
light
funny.
Years.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to like feel that. But like when they talk to you, it is sort of a thing where it's so nice and so flattering when someone asks you a genuine question about mm-hmm. something or like wants to listen to you mm-hmm. and you go, oh, I could just do this to the people that I feel this way about.
Yeah.
But I don't because I'm so worried about impressing them.
Yeah,
I'm so worried about doing my little, what if I riffed here? What if like, what if I could make, and then they just roll their eyes.
Yeah, and they're like, I hang out with, you know, the best comedians in the world. Like,
yeah.
I sometimes it's nice just to have a good buddy, just to have a good friend. Also, how many times in your life, like as this career progresses, whatever else, who's the famous musician in Almost Famous?
Oh, I forget.
Whatever, you're either going to turn into him or you're going to turn into Kate sometimes where mm-hmm. you're such a fan of the world, but it's, you know, it's broken you down sometimes. But as you progress and as you get older, you're never going to be the kid. You're going to be less and less the kid.
You're going to be less the kid.
So as much as you can be the kid. Soak it in. Enjoy
it. Yeah.
Watch
yeah.
your heroes.
Ask the people the questions.
Don't try and match your heroes. Enjoy your heroes.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, and also like, the more you sit back and soak and learn and be in the moment, you kind of grow as a person.
Absolutely.
Instead of just trying to like project what you are and push that on people.
That's very, very insightful. That's good. I mean, you've really put some thought into this.
I don't know. I just lived. I enjoyed this weekend more than I have most weekends with people in a long time because I stopped putting pressure on myself to be entertaining.
So this is a question that I found that relates to it. How do you live life in the present moment? Why do I feel like my soul isn't connected with my body? I just don't feel aware or alert in living in the present moment. I'm more living in my thoughts, emotions, overthinking, mm-hmm. which makes me overwhelmed and emotionally tense. Sometimes when I sit in my car, I wanted to talk about this specifically. When I sit in my car, my mind is drifting everywhere, and I don't feel like I'm driving my car. I get so lost in my thoughts, and sometimes I feel like throwing cold water on my head and making myself alert. So two things. One, the car.
Yeah.
The car for me is such a interesting place because I've had a lot of times where something really overwhelming happens to me, but I don't feel it until I close my car door. Mm-hmm. Like, and then when you're there alone in this kind of little box of silence, you actually start, you know, soaking up what was happening in your life. And I've had a lot of just like screams in my car. I've had a lot of just, you know, it's a place that's so interesting to me personally when it comes to mindfulness. And the second thing, when it comes to the cold water, it's like, yeah, do that.
Yeah,
put some cold water on your face.
Yeah.
I think it's good.
Yeah. I mean, I think like I've been to therapy. I think what you're saying, I feel like those thoughts too, like you're not connected. You're constantly lost in your thoughts. It's realizing why you're in freeze mode.
Yeah.
Or almost flight mode as far as emotionally. You're like, I can't handle how I feel in front of people, so I'm emotionally detaching.
Yes.
Which is like flight response.
Totally.
But like, it's a freeze or a flight response.
Totally.
And as cliche as this is, you learned it as a kid. And if you can go back and start to realize what moments you started to feel unsafe,
yeah,
and you needed to freeze or fly away, then you can kind of connect when those triggers happen.
Were you a freezer or a flyer?
It's funny. I disassociate
right.
a lot, and but I also, I guess, kind of emotionally fly away,
right?
Which kind of is freeze.
In a way, yeah. I think detachment is another, but you like, that's a really big response that a lot of people have. When you say, like, fly away, are you saying that you kind of go into your imagination? Or,
mm-hmm.
yeah, interesting.
I go into my imagination. I think of, or I even just go escape into my phone and play a game where I can
look
just
at what Beyonce's mom is
look
up
at
to.
Rihanna. Go watch a corny joke by Beyonce's mom.
Right.
She does corny joke time.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. But it's understanding that those moments of you not being connected to your body is because you're distressed.
Yeah, something is wrong. And it can be a little distress, but because we have such access to calm and comfort from our phones, mm-hmm. like that little distress is good for you. Like,
yeah.
a little bit of distress that you have to sit with. And what I started doing, and this isn't prescriptive in any way, but it has personally helped me, I don't look at my phone in the morning until I get the things that I want done. I'll wake up. I have an external alarm clock there. I set it before I have to do anything. And I had a friend who tried to be like, oh, Dan, that, like, when I had the idea for it, they were like, yeah, but what if there's, like, an emergency, Dan? Like, you have to look at your phone in the morning right away because, like, what if there's an emergency that you have to attend to? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, I thought it was a good point. I've been doing this for, like, at least 6 months now.
Really?
There's no emergencies. There's nothing that, yeah. like, I'm sure there's been times where I open my phone and I was like, oh, no, or whatever, but it's, like, nothing that I can't.
Yeah.
Do
what
then.
If you slept for an hour more?
What if I? That's exactly my thought. Like,
yeah.
what if you just slept for an hour more? There's no like, I'm not Jason Bourne. No
yeah.
one's gonna be like, Dan, get out of your apartment now. It's never happened.
No.
Yeah.
And like, you would get a call, or I mean, you would. It's fine. You'd figure
it's
it out.
It's just fine. Yeah, it's just fine.
Alarm.
At this point, even if like whatever, I check my phone an hour or two after I wake up, and my buddy's like, "What, Dan? You have to Dave Chappelle is trying to get a new opener, like, and he's just
yeah.
gonna enter." Like, I'll be like, "All right, well, it's been worth it." The 6 months that I've had of just kind of peace in the morning, the amount of writing I've gotten done.
Wow, really?
Is, oh,
I should do that.
I wrote a book. Not a super long one, 65,000 words, but wrote it. No one will probably ever see it.
Why? No.
I just wanted to.
Get it out there.
I just wanted to write it.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah. And it was literally all because you like to convince yourself. I think a lot of people will do two things. They'll either give themselves too much power or not enough power. But I was giving myself too much power over my phone. Like, I was giving myself credit for having too much power over my phone, where I was like, oh, if I want to write it, like, yeah, I'll look at my phone for a little bit, and I'll write for a little bit, and I'll turn my phone off. And then yeah. I'm like, oh, I can't. Once the momentum has started, once I start looking at my phone, until I go, I'm putting this down until I go to bed, it has a pull towards me.
Yeah.
So I realized that, and I went, okay, so until I get my writing done for the morning, I'm going to show. And as a test, I was like, I wonder if I could, like, I felt so kind of empowered doing it. I was like, oh, what if I just wrote a book? Like, wouldn't that be crazy?
What?
And it took me 3 months. I wrote like 1,000 words a day, give or take. And it just, like, at the end of it, it's shitty. It, like, doesn't follow a narrative, but it was so fun.
Oh my God,
you use your imagination
so
in a crazy way. Yeah, but it's so funny because you ask yourself these questions like, how does someone do, like, how could someone do that possibly?
I've always said that about a book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's literally, for me, it was literally just turning my phone off until I'm done writing. That was
so inspiring. I want to. Yeah. My phone is my captor.
Yeah.
That's like the next step I want to do is.
And I'm a huge social, like, I'm on social media all the time.
Yeah.
It's part of my work. It's why I've gotten all the things that I've gotten, which, you know, isn't much, as you can see, but this nice thing.
It got
social
you
media,
blanket.
You know what I mean?
It got you this cheeky blanket.
Yeah. So that when it comes to like presence and stuff, I think a little bit of it is just kind of getting older, you know,
so
getting
true.
Better at it.
And, putting yourself out there and getting rejections,
yeah,
is the best thing.
Yeah,
it's been the best thing for me.
Yeah, well, it just teaches you. Like, it's such a good way of like learning.
Yeah,
like
how
to be present in even a bad situation, so you can be present in a good situation.
Because you're like this. I just go in. Sorry.
Oh no,
sorry,
you're fine.
My phone calling me.
That's fine.
It's
your phone's getting fucking pissed off at what you're saying. What were you saying,
yeah,
bitch?
What were you saying about me?
What were you fucking saying about me?
We fucking wake up together.
You're
we go
mine.
To sleep together.
You're fucking mine.
Yeah, I tell you when to wake up in the middle of the night and cuddle me.
That's really funny.
I love getting, the more rejections you get, the more you just realize the stuff, like, the good stuff comes when you're not. The best stuff for you comes when you haven't put any weight on it.
That's a great way to put it. Great way to end the regular episode. We have a couple of questions that I want to run on the Patreon, but what do you have to plug? Go ahead and tell the people.
Okay, this is kind of far out because I'm editing it right now. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop looking at my phone, and I'm going to edit 6 minutes of my special every morning till I get it through. I just recorded a special, so it...
That's crazy.
It won't be out... I mean, it'll probably be 4 months, but... If you just follow me on social media at It's Catherine Blanford.
I'll add it all.
Okay,
in the
yeah. So just be ready, guys. Be ready.
Catherine's
for
one
four
of the
months.
Funniest people I've ever seen. I haven't seen this special. I co-sign it immediately.
Thank you.
Go on there, you're like, the fucking vaccine is on.
Oh, it's gonna be, guys. I ad libbed the whole thing.
Yeah, I co-sign this, and you go on there, you're like, I was at January 6th.
I was at January 6th. I do. It's in a jail cell. There's no one else there. It's
That's
a little
really
artsy.
Good. Yeah, it's a little cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining.
You.
And we're going to switch to the Patreon right now.